Welcome, everybody, back to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I am your host, Jason Verlinde, the founder and editor of the Fretboard Journal magazine. I'm keeping this intro short this week. I am pretty darn busy, so if you hate the long intros, you're in for a treat. Today, I'm talking to Molly Miller, the acclaimed educator, jazz guitarist, rock guitarist, awesome human being. She was in our 49th issue. Hopefully you all saw that. Hopefully you're all subscribed at fretboardjournal.com. And she just put out a new record with her trio called The Ballad of Hotspur, and I wanted to hear all about it. I'm not usually the kind of guy who uses the word groove, but Molly finds the groove, and the rhythm section on this album is just stellar. You're going to hear all about it. I love this record. I think you will too. Anyone out there who digs Julian Lage and Mark Ribot and any of the groovy jazz guitar stuff out there is going to enjoy it. And the thing about Molly that's so cool is she's got an incredible sensibility. She's incredibly funny. She's brimming with enthusiasm about guitar in general. She plays with Jason Mraz. Like, she's just so multifaceted. It's fascinating. Again, the new record is called The Ballad of Hotspur. I hope you will check it out. And I hope you will check out our sponsors. They are Stringjoy Strings. There's a discount code in the show notes. Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar here in Seattle, Washington, one of the coolest guitar stores around. We're brought to you by Peghead Nation, where you can save if you use the discount code, again, in the show notes. Our friends at Stumac are sponsoring the show once again. You want to build an amp? They've got amp kits. You want to build a guitar? They've got guitar kits. So much more. Come meet them at the Fretboard Summit that we're throwing this August in Chicago. And last but not least, you all sponsor this show. At least those of you on Patreon. We have a Patreon for this podcast. It's a great way to support what I do. If you love hearing these podcasts every week, we have a lot of fun over on Patreon. It's a little different than over here. I share some behind the scenes stories of what we're working on and also some thought pieces. It's a lot of fun. I hope you will join us. With all that out of the way, I'm going to fast track this one. This is Molly Miller. Her new album is incredible. Please go check it out. Molly Miller, welcome.
Hi, good to be here.
You participated in Adam Levy and Ethan Sherman's String Theory takeover, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, it was fun.
And you've been in the Fretboard Journal relatively recently. It was like 49th issue?
Yeah, something like that. It was, yeah, I think when my last record came out, which was 2021, so maybe end of that year or top 2022.
Yeah, and but for folks who maybe don't know your story or have maybe just seen you on Instagram, like, tell me about how you spend your time now, because it's like, clearly you've got the USC component, you're touring the world, like, give us the walkthrough.
Like when I'm not on the tennis court hitting balls? Like
when I'm yeah, when you're not, and tell us about the tennis side too, I want to hear about that.
Yeah, I'm a serious tennis player. I balance a few different things in my life. In the career world, outside of my tennis career. So I teach, I'm in the education world. I teach at USC, which has been fun. I went there for my undergrad, master's, and doctorate. So now I'm back teaching, and I've been there for 2.5 years, and it's been super fun and fulfilling to be there. The students are great. And I also do some online ed stuff because it's nice to interact with larger than just the Los Angeles community. I tour for pop artists. I work with Jason Mraz. I'll be out with Zayn a bit coming up too from One Direction. Just did some stuff with him. And then Molly Miller Trio. And we're putting out a record May 3rd. And we are opening for Jason this summer. And we have a bunch of tour dates coming up as well, just on our own with Jennifer Condos and Jay Bellerose. So in like the guitar world, I'm sort of like, or work world, career world, like balance the educator, side woman, band leader, and then of course just like gigs around town and session work too, so it's fun.
And then the tennis side.
And tennis. And then I'm a serious tennis player / advanced reformer Pilates lady.
Is the tennis a real like a daily or at least a few times a week thing?
I'd say three. I like, it's gotten to a point where I'm like, I love it so much. I play like 3 times a week, I'd say. Sometimes more, sometimes like 2 to 4 times a week.
Okay. And not transition to pickleball. You're old school.
I would say hell no. Sorry. Yeah, it's funny. I saw James Valentine a couple months ago and he's gone pickleball and I'm like, I can't, I just can't. My parents play too. And I play with my dad and he made an anti-pickleball t-shirt. So like, that's where I'm coming from. Yeah.
You're the get off my lawn when you see the guys at the court with the pickleball rackets that you should be playing on.
Yeah. Yes. I am annoyed by the courts they're taking, okay. But I will say I have played pickleball once. I had a good time. I did well. It was a pleasant experience, but I was like, why is the court so small? Why are the sounds so poppy? Like, give me my tennis racket.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to run around.
Yeah. I'm hesitant, but so close to trying to come up with some sort of guitar metaphor for pickleball versus tennis, like the
ukulele.
Ooh, hot take.
Or the bass. Oh, sorry, bass players. I'm just kidding.
What is your role? I mean, at USC, you know, academics, it's like professors can mean many different things. Some of them actually are teaching in a giant lecture hall. Some of them are, you know, doing one-on-one stuff and helping people with their thesis. Like, where are you at with all that?
Yeah, it varies on the semester what class I teach. Typically, I teach two classes a semester and then have some private students. This semester, I'm just private, and it's worked out nicely just because of how everything's fallen. But typically, I'll teach small classes. Like, I mean, the guitar program at USC is a really little like boutique small program. There's like 7-8 professors and like 30-40 students, and we have grad students and undergrad, so I'll interface with both. And I teach like a solo guitar class, I was teaching a trio guitar class, like an ensemble, the sophomore guitar course. Yeah, so those were like the three main ones, like ensemble, solo guitar, and trio guitar, and that's for some undergrad and grad students. And yeah. And the core like sophomore guitar class, and everyone's so good. Like, it honestly is like, I get inspired by my lessons. Like, we go, we play tunes, we talk weird, heady stuff and emotional stuff, because it's emotional to be like a musician, a guitar player trying to like go out into the world and make sense of it. So I really love it. And it's fun. And it's weird because I wasn't there that long ago, per se. I graduated in 2016. Yeah, so I'm teaching classes I took, which is still so strange for me, but fun and rewarding, and I love doing it.
And they love you so much that they're like, yeah, go tour the world with Jason Mraz for a few months. Come back. It's fine.
I mean, I've been really lucky the last three summers where I leave, and I wish it was like not an exaggeration. Like, I leave the day school ends and I come back the day school begins. Like, last summer, my last gig with Jason was in San Diego on like a Wednesday night. And then I had to teach the next morning at 11 a.m. So I like left San Diego with my car packed with gear. And I was like, okay, let's start the school year. And it's so, this summer's like that again. Like, I'm missing juries to be on the East Coast. And I like, and tour with Jason ends on August 12th. And I think maybe I'll be doing, yeah. So it is what it is though. It's like, it's worked out where basically every semester I've been gone like 2 weeks with some touring stuff, and then all summer I'm gone. Wow. So the gig gods have been good to me, where I haven't had to have a semester yet where I'm like, hey, like, sorry, I can't be here this semester. So I'm just doing the dance and hoping all the things stay up in the air.
I want to circle back to what it's like to be in a touring scene like Jason Mraz's, and your opening for him coming up, which is super cool. But before we get to that, your role at USC, I bet, allows you a view into the world of like the future guitarists of the world and what's actually inspiring them right now. And I'm guessing there are some surprising things that, you know, where you're like, wow, a lot of my students are all talking about this person. Does that happen?
Well, so I was at a different college before, Los Angeles College of Music. And for some reason, I felt like there was a bigger cohesive wave of one thing. And there, maybe it's like a different student body too. You know, there's a lot of like I felt like there was a big wave of like, everyone loved like Snarky Puppy and Guthrie Govan. And like, but the USC students I have found to be a little like, it's not as much as everyone's into one thing, which is cool. And it's almost like sometimes confessionals I find with my students where, like, sometimes I think you think when you go to jazz school, you're supposed to only be like into like Wes Montgomery and Herbie Hancock or whatever. And I'll have students be like, I'm also interested in other music. And I'm like, great. So am I. So is all your professors. We all are. Like, that's okay. You can do more than 251s, but learn your 251s. So, like, I do see they're such good students at USC, really, and they're eclectic. And that's been one of the fun things, like, to be inspired by my students. And some of them are super into, like, country, and some like I taught this guitar ensemble last semester where they all brought in their own arrangements. Some brought like original funk tunes, some brought original jazz tunes. So like one guy did a Chris Thiele tune that he rearranged for guitar. Like, it is cool to see that. I think it is the Wild West now, which is amazing, because I think that is representative of what music is, like, especially guitar music. You don't have to just be one thing anymore.
Yeah, that's super cool. So what do you got on with Jason? Do you guys even have like rehearsals at this point? Or is this just like, we're all a finely tuned machine here. We can just hit the road tomorrow.
You know, I think if it was up to Jason, we would do that. And I have done that with Jason, where he's like, here's the set list. Yeah, we'll run some stuff at soundcheck. Chill. You know, but because this summer we're doing like, it's really for like lighting and video crew, why we do rehearsals. Like, I kind of love it where he's like, here's a song. Let's go try it. Maybe we'll do it this way. Maybe we won't. Let's jam. Let's go for it. But because of video and lighting, we have to be a little bit more reeled in. But yeah, Jason, he's down for the jazz. Let's just go for it and play and listen. But we are rehearsing for like 5 days this summer, which is a lot of rehearsing for a band us.
I mean, you could just have extras, right? For the lighting and video, and just someone who sort of looks like you. If you can't make it, standing where you would stand.
I know. I think someone in Jason's team or his team is like, you guys should rehearse. You haven't played in a year, you know? Okay. And I don't know, I imagine there's new songs and stuff too, because Jason's always creating. So we do rehearse, minimal rehearsals. And it depends. Sometimes Jason's more in a like wild card mood. We're like, let's try this, let's try that. And sometimes we have a more steady set. The team is a little divided, even of like liking one steady set that we go with. I'm kind of like, let's just do a new set every night. Like, I kind of love the just like, I don't know, the thrill of it, of trying new stuff and just going for it.
Does your gear change? Like for this upcoming thing, you've got the trio. Mm-hmm. Is your gear the same for the trio as it is you're playing with Jason? Or have you not figured this out yet?
No, I need to fine tune it. But yeah, so I was a pedal board amp person forever until 2-3 years ago. I went Helix because every summer, lo and behold, there was some moment I'd like step on my pedal board for a solo and it'd be like, and I'd be so sad, or there would just be like weird stuff happening. And so I went Helix for ease of everything. And God, I have to say, it has made my life so much easier. And I use it in some other situations too. So what I've done is I will bring a Helix and I'll have a couple pedals on the side that I feel like I need. Last summer I had a wah and like the Benson Geranium Boost. I had the Wacko Jam wah on the side. I had those two because I felt like the wah I couldn't capture and a little of that drive I just couldn't quite get from the Helix. And the guitars are changing. I have a couple core guitars. Oh, and then I have an amp on stage. So what I do is I just, even though I have in-ears in, sometimes I'll put them like one of them a little out. I still like to have an amp behind me. So I'll have a Benson Monarch behind me, the Helix with a couple pedals on the side, and the Helix is running XLR front of house with a modded amp and then 1/4 inch to the amp without the amp mod on it too. So I have everything, I guess. And that's, and then I'll have, and then normally I take the LP Tele for sure. And then like the other two guitars kind of vary. Like I've taken the Albert Lee, I like having a 335 style guitar, but like the other two kind of vary depending on what's happening in my emotional state the week before tour, you know?
Yeah. And are you're going to, for the trio, you're going to use that same kind of amp rig?
Yeah. I mean, you know, of course, part of me is like, yeah, I am. I have to get it. I have to figure out my sounds for the trio. I just haven't done that yet. I'm home for a few weeks in June. Like I'm gone most of May. And then in June I'm home and I feel like that's when I'll kind of sort out what my final pieces are. Like I just got a couple new Keeley pedals. They're like right here. I think it's actually like the blues disorder and that noble, tube. They're amazing. I'm like, maybe I'll take that instead of Drini. I don't know yet. So I'll make those decisions in June, but for sure for the trio set, I won't do in-ear. So I'll have probably, I don't know if I'll do the XLR thing too. I might. Well, I'll mess with it with front of house, but I'll for sure do Helix, a couple pedals, probably the Tele, maybe a 335 and an amp.
Wow.
It's just,
I feel like the Fretboard Journal crowd and its subjects tend to be a little more traditional leaning than most. But in the last month, I've heard more quad cortex, Helix talk, like so many touring musicians. I mean, I just interviewed John Smith, who I think most people would think of as like a folk singer, and he's using a quad cortex. So I think for ease of use and versatility and fewer headaches, it's the future.
I know. And I like dragged my feet on it for so long. Like I got a Helix and probably for a year, I just looked at it and I was like, could I do it? I don't know. There's too many knobs. Like I liked going down in the middle of a tune and like shifting the drive a little bit or like just changing things and having it be really interactive and live. And you can do that with the Helix. It's just not quite the same. But I just think it makes so much more sense. Like as much as I want to bring a pedal board out, like, you know, going in and out of a truck every day, shaking around, like I could get it set up and it'll probably be fine. But I'm just I know. And also like the thing that people forget is like, I'm not in a little club, you know, like my amp is getting mic'd and it's then going through these big speakers. A PA, like it's not the same. Like if I'm in a small room or in a club, like I always have like a pedal board and an amp, but yeah, it's just so different when you're on a big stage. Like it's just a different oral experience for the listeners and for you. Yeah.
I can only imagine. I mean, what size stadium, do you know the biggest stadium or festival you're playing this year?
I'm trying to think, like we normally do like 5 to 15, like that's okay. What a normal thing for us is I'd say 5 to 15, depending on the day. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And when do you find time to do the trio? I mean, you've got this record, which I want to hear all about. When do you carve out time for that?
It's the beautiful thing with freelance where, you know, school ended on April 29th and I booked a tour May 1st. I know I'm not touring with Jason in May. So I booked a tour in May and now I'm opening for him too. And before I knew I was opening for him, I started booking gigs on the day off. So oh, like,
perfect.
I have fast fingers that were sending emails to try to get as much trio stuff happening as possible. Like tonight I have a gig with Jen and Jay in town. Just like warming up and getting things ready for tour. But yeah, trio, we do a lot of stuff in town, honestly, just like gigs around town when I can and just to like work stuff out. And we're super stoked about touring the music around the country too.
Yeah. So are you booking your own trio shows?
Yes. For any agents out there that are interested in representing me, I'm available. My fingers are tired. So I'm here and ready for help. But yeah, I've just been doing it myself. I had two not great things. I got ghosted and then I did get ghosted by one booker, but I was able to get another show. That booker, she's a little loony. I've worked with her before, so I accepted it. And I thought I got ghosted by a different booker, but I didn't. And I had already booked another show. So I'm trying, I would love support. I have been successful. It's been, I'm stoked. Like I booked a bunch of shows. I booked tours for the trio, West Coast and East Coast.
That's so cool.
But yeah.
Have you thought about making like a fake Gmail with like your agent's name, but it's really just you?
I do have management at mollymillermusic.com and technically someone else has it, but like, I don't know if it's that I'm controlling or also I think that I don't know if it actually makes a difference. Like, I think the truth is it's kind of nice just to interact with me because I'm like a musician that responds to emails. So like, I would imagine that, like, you know, like I do a lot of demos and gear stuff too. Like I was talking to my brother last week who is not in the music world. My non-musician brother was like, why don't you get like an agent or a manager to book you that stuff? I'm like, I think because it's almost twice as much work to have like them talk to someone, to talk to me, to see my, and I'm just kind of like, yeah, I'm free. Let's do it. Hey, can we book a gig now? I know my schedule. Cause I think because it is kind of a tightrope of like teaching of all the things that, I don't know. I mean, I'd love to have an agent. Like that would make my life a lot easier. But the fake email thing, I don't know if it would make a difference.
Yeah. And you're clearly doing well.
I think I'd get caught too. Like actually I had someone do that to me. I had a PR guy, like for my first record, lovely guy. But, he had someone write my bio with like a separate email, but I was like, let's just talk on the phone. Like I knew it was him.
Oh, muffled voice, t-shirt yeah. over the receiver.
Well, he wouldn't get on the phone with me. And I'm like, oh you have a fake email. Like what? So I'm afraid of fake emails. I can't lie.
What kind of clubs outside of LA where there's this whole cool ecosystem of, I mean, there's all, since I've been in LA for, it's been a while since I've lived in Southern California or California, but there's all these cool new venues that I keep hearing about. But outside of LA, is it jazz clubs? Is it rock clubs? Is it like this weird mix of folks who, you know, you and want to book you?
Yeah. I mean, it is really a mix. Like for example, and I'll reach out to people. Like I reached out to Adam Levy when I wanted to play in New York and he recommended Lunatico. I forget how you pronounce it, but it's like a club in Brooklyn that I feel like is similar to some spots in LA. And I just honestly reached out to a bunch of people to ask where we should play. We're playing at a spot called The Falcon, which is like supposed to be a cool club an hour and a half north of New York. And so those are like clubs, but Nashville, we're playing a drum shop. We're playing Nelson's Drum Shop. And if we play in Portland, Jay has a drum shop up there he thinks would be cool. So it is kind of a hodgepodge. Like we're playing a guitar shop in Atlanta, a proper club in Knoxville. Like it is just, yeah, a Kumba jazz in Santa Cruz, but then like a piano shop in Oakland that has shows. Like, so it is just like a mixture. Some are like proper jazz clubs. We're doing like a proper listening room jazz lounge in San Diego. But some are like past the bucket, cool, vibey, like listening rooms. And, some are guitar shops and yeah, and I think that is like, even in LA, like there aren't that many great venues to play in. So for my album release, I was looking at clubs and then I decided there's this cool space in Atwater Village that's like people do tango in and they're starting to do some shows there. And I'm like, it felt so right. Like Jen, Jay and I, for our music, like I don't really want a PA for like, you know, an album release with like 100, 150 people. So we're going to set up in the middle of the room and it's this big, beautiful space. We don't need a PA. And like, that felt more right than going to some random venue in LA and dealing with the door and all that stuff. Like I'm just selling tickets on my website.
I love it.
Yeah. I kind of think like the DIY thing is like sort of a big part of the reality of, I think, where I'm at. And for a lot of musicians, whether like, I think house concerts are a thing and it's
sure.
Just, yeah, that to the next level even, you know, where it's not just house concerts, but it's like, find a venue, sell some tickets, do it yourself. Like, so we have the platform, we have social media, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, streaming obviously is what everybody talks about when they talk about how the music industry has evolved, but touring and booking and all sorts, all this other stuff, all the online education, it's all new.
Yes. I mean, yeah, same with education. Really, I do so much of the online space and I feel like that's where it's really fruitful in a lot of ways too.
Talk to me about the new record.
The new record. I'm so excited. Yeah. It comes out in just a couple weeks. A lot of the songs were written during the pandemic. It's Western inspired a la Morricone, but obviously like jazz flair and some folk stuff. We're thinking about songs and arrangements that all the songs were written by the trio. Some, yeah, it was like, some of them were written, you know, with me in my bedroom and Jen in her bedroom. And then we put the songs together. And for months we were just doing it virtually. And then finally you know, deep into the pandemic, we got together and like put the songs to life and recorded it. It's like embarrassing, but like 2 years ago, almost to the date right now. And it took so long to put out because I kept deciding, you know, changing my mind of how I was going to put it out. But now it's going to be on Jason Mraz's label, which I'm excited about. So yeah, I'm super excited about the record. All original, all guitar music. All we recorded it in 2 days. It's almost completely live except for drum percussion overdubs.
Okay. I'll ask you the question I've been asking a lot of jazz guitarists lately. How do you name these tracks? Who names them and how do you name them? Yeah.
Okay. Depends. So most of the songs that I've written just alone, like some songs Jen and I and Jen Jay and I kind of do are collaborative on, some songs I just write by myself. When I write a song by myself, typically there are lyrics-ish. You know, like there's some sort of like mantra or something that is going through me in my head with the guitar part. So they're written because like that line, I keep saying the same line
it's
again.
It's like transcendental meditation.
Yes. And we actually have a new song, which will be on our new record whenever we record that is about that. Now I'm trying to remember the saying, but it's like a Buddhist saying where it's like, da, 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 and you okay. Like, you keep saying, I have it somewhere, but yes. And we actually gotten even deeper into it. We have a whole song where it is just a meditation. We keep playing this line again and again and again, and it explodes. So yeah, but some of the songs when I'm writing them, it is a little meditative where I have lines that I keep saying. And so some of the titles will come from that. Some of them have like a really clear meaning like that. Where it's about something specific. And some songs, Jen comes up with great titles. So she'll write a section and I write a section. And it's not necessarily this like emotional state that it was written from, but more just like a vibe. And she'll be like, how about this? Or what about this? Or like, it's more random. Like, yeah. And like, you know, we have two West and 66 West. Like we were thinking of like roads and highways, and those are like a part of our Western theme song. So some of them were like more Western themed, and that's where the title came from. And it was like a visual thing, like Orchids and Cowboys. Like that was a visual theme of like, yeah.
I love it. Did the Western meets jazz things sort of, was there an artist or an album that kind of got you? I mean, there's the Sonny Rollins, right? I mean, there's so many things that could be, yeah, there's so many things that could be your entree point. Tell me.
It's funny. I do have an arrangement of I'm an Old Cowhand that's totally inspired from Way Out West.
Really? Is that online? Yes.
I don't think so. I'll find, you know, I really want to record it because I love the arrangement.
Yeah.
I have a few arrangements. I'm just like, I'll get it and I'll send it to you. I'll find it somewhere because we have a cool arrangement and Jay crushes it so hard. It's like there's a drum feature on it too. So I'll record it and send it to you. Maybe tonight at our gig.
Thanks. I'm amazed. Yeah.
Yes. But the actual, it was a couple things. I mean, I think like guitar music, you know, like Dwayne Eddy, I love Mickey Baker. Even though he's not like there was different inspirations for the record that weren't like Western per se when we were going to the studio and thinking about the arrangements, like Booker T and the MGs and Dave Brubeck and Mickey Baker. I'd say like those were some influences. But no, what happened was during COVID when I was just like, you know, tears flooding from my face, calling Jen, you know, like our life, our shows, what we, you know, she was like, Molly, like, this is just write music, enjoy the peaceful moment because it will pass. And like, let's write some music. I want to do a Western concept record. And I was like, okay, you know, I could do that. Okay. So we started writing tunes and a bunch of them ended up on the trio record versus the Western concept record. And so that's where it kind of stemmed from. And you know, we used to play this song, Vice of Killing, a Morricone song.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was some inspiration too, because it's such a fun song to play and it really works well in the trio setting. So yeah, I think that's where some of the inspiration came from. And then I feel like the record came together. Like we had, you know, you write a bunch of songs and play them. And normally I feel like when you write songs in a period of time, they're connected. So even if like one's more jazzy, one's more folky, one's more Western, like they are still connected. So It was fun piecing it together and then making it more cohesive. And we were also trying not to be too on the nose. You know, some of the demos were more on the nose or, yeah.
Yeah. And so 2 years ago, this predates your current amp situation. What were you using gear-wise?
It's funny. It was actually like I was waiting for the amp to show up. And I think my Nathan Jr., Benson Nathan Jr. showed up like the day after I finished recording. But so I was using my Princeton Reverb, which is right here. Please ignore the mess. But that little guy. And then I think it was a Studio Vibrolux. So I had those two amps. So I had two amps and two pedal boards. I recorded it with Jason Warmer. He's in like the T-Bone Burnett camp. He's wonderful. And we did his pedal board going to the Vibrolux, my pedal board going into the Princeton, and then blended the two sounds.
That's cool. And what guitars?
Mostly my 335, my Tele, and my LP on one song. I had forgotten I used my LP, and then I was looking at my notes the other day from the record. I was like, whoa, I used my LP on that song. Like, no recollection.
Yeah. What's your acoustic guitar situation look like?
Yes, I have worked with Taylor a bunch. So I have a couple different Taylors, but I didn't play any like acoustic on the record. It's all electric. I mean, I love playing acoustic guitar. I think for the trio stuff,
that'd be a different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The only acoustic thing I used to do was we used to do These Days, which I kind of want to do another version of. We used to do like a Nico version of These Days where I'd play acoustic on it. And then we were maybe going to redo it where Jen played the melody, but it's such a beautiful song. I want to figure out a trio arrangement that would work without doing the iconic Nico finger picking thing. But I think that would be electric. So I don't know. I love acoustic, but I only play it in specific situations when like I'm playing for an artist that makes sense, but never my trio stuff. And I've done solo guitar arrangements on acoustic too, but yeah.
And with Jason, you didn't mention any electrics. So is that, you don't do any, or acoustics, you don't?
I've done it before. Every now and then there's a song. Not last summer. I think 2 summers ago, I played acoustic on a couple. I think it's a 317. I'm like, God, I wish I knew that. It's like, right. Yeah.
The Taylor names are complicated.
Oh my God.
Keep track.
I'm like, I got a 9-1, a 3-1, the Koa. I have a few Taylors and they're beautiful. I also have I just got that orange wood rubber bridge one, which is fun to play too. So yeah, I have a couple Taylors. I love playing acoustic, but I'm more of an electric lady.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it.
Not to Hendrix. Yeah.
Well, the album is amazing and I really loved it. In the end it's funny to see on, cause this is an advanced release. So it's on SoundCloud. So you can see how many people ahead of you listen to what track, and everybody, at least in my experience, listens to the first track, but then it's kind of interesting to see what the second most listened track is. It's usually not the second track.
Yeah. What is it?
I don't know, but it was I don't know if it's just people picking a song title that sounds interesting or what, but
I know I had the same thought. Cause now that you're saying, I like have looked, I'm like, and I don't remember what it was, but it is funny to see what is the most played. I do agree. In the end, actually, that was a solo guitar song. That song came from
beautiful.
Adam Levy was doing a guitar club during COVID where every week he'd like send out a prompt. And then there's probably 15 people in it and you'd write an original. It could be an A section. It could be a whole piece, but just something that is inspired by that prompt. And in the end came from that.
This is another thing. This and the modeling amps are the two big trends I've observed. Cause when I interviewed a singer-songwriter, Matt the Electrician from Austin, and he's all about he's on some email list where you get a prompt every week.
Yeah.
And you have to turn in a song or you get kicked out of the group.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jason Mraz is in one too. And I always thought it was so cool. And then during COVID, Adam did it. We probably did it for like 15, 20 weeks. It's harder now, but also the thing is like, you could sit down for 20 minutes and do it. Like sometimes I'd be like, I have 30 minutes and I'm going to write in response to this prompt. And whatever it is, it's fine. It's not going online and for everyone to nitpick. Like, it's for this club. And yeah. I do love it.
So cool. Yeah, that's like the new thing as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
Or maybe the old thing that's finally getting some notoriety or something.
I think it's really cool too. And I want to do another one. Maybe this summer I feel like it'd be cool to do another one. Yeah, because I think it's like writing's like anything. It's just, it is like the more you do it, the better you get at it.
Yeah. What are you listening to these days?
A bunch of different things. It was funny. I was thinking how this week was a little weird. Someone sent me a Billy Joel track and I realized I'd never really listened to Billy Joel. And I'm like, oh my God, Billy Joel is so good. So Billy Joel and U2 are two people that I went and saw U2 at the Sphere.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, oh my God, U2's amazing. And it's embarrassing that I didn't know Billy Joel and U2 are amazing. Oh. But I think my parents missed that era of music. So I kind of missed it too. So this week was Billy Joel, U2, George Benson. I love, the cookbook, that record, the cookbook. Yeah. That was like coming up this week. I've really got into this year, Big Thief and Adrian Lanker. I love them. I think her songs are beautiful. She just came out with a record.
Yep.
Yeah. I'd say that's like what was on my playlist this last week.
So you're really confusing the Spotify algorithm. It sounds
it's true. I put on it's like always fun to see with Discover Weekly. I'm like, where do they think I'm at? Sometimes they've really hit. It's like one out of every four, they crush it. And I'm like star, 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 like keeping that for my liked playlist. Mm-hmm. But yeah. And especially then when I'm teaching too, it'll be like all over the map. Cause then I get what my students like, cause we're listening to their tracks.
Keep them on their toes. Keep those robots. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I can barely keep track of, I don't know what's happening. So make them confused too.
We talked about your work at USC. We've talked about your life on the road and the new record, the online education component. I know you've got the CAGE program. Like how many different programs do you have and how much of that? How much does that eat into your week?
Yeah. So the pickup CAGE stuff was like, I feel like we recorded it all in like 10 days in the fall. Mm-hmm. So that's like, I do it, I'm done. But I do these courses called with a company called Till, T-I-L. I think the website's like Learn on Till. And typically I like to do these 6-7 week courses that are two different courses at a time, one day a week. And they're super fun. I'll get like 30 students in each class at a time. And it's like my own little mini college classes. And it's fun. It's like most of them are like intermediate to intermediate advanced students. And we'll do like chord melody classes or like, I call them string theory of like, and it's like triad classes and understanding your fretboard in a different way. And I've done demystifying the modes because I hate the way the modes are taught. I think I'm going to do an intro to jazz class. And I was going to be actually starting one this week, but I'm out of town now all of May. So I think I'll do a one in June. So I normally do like 3 or 4 sessions of those a year. And it's so fun. And like I've developed relationships with people all over the world. Like I think I had a student in like Tanzania or something who's taken a bunch of my classes. I was emailing with my student who lives in South Dakota, who's like going to come to my show in Denver. Like we've hung out a couple times. I have, it's like always weird. I have a few students that have taken like all of my classes. So I've worked with them for like 3 years and they become your like online, like, I don't know, friends. And a few of them I've met in person where they'll like pop up at a show and I'm like, I almost want to like touch their face, you know, to be like, is it real? And I'll do like, yeah. So I try to keep it to that for online. I do some online privates occasionally, but between USC, I prefer to keep it like USC is the in-person thing. And then I'll do like Till online. And that's kind of cool because I like to practice guitar. I got to figure out what pedals I'm bringing this summer. I like to write music and play tennis. Like I try to have some time to do all the other things.
It's so cool hearing just how the puzzle of being a professional musician educator comes together these days.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice. I'm at USC. Like I teach like 9 hours a week right now. So I do that for like I have like 2 half days.
And it's then not bad.
No, it's great. I like love it. You know, it's like it's like some sort of structure in this life of that's unstructured. Yeah.
I know you were a fan of Adam and Ethan's book. Have you thought about doing a book?
It's funny. I actually ironically have a book called String Theory. Okay. Because I think it all stems from
lawsuit.
So, I know it's String Theory. So Adam and I taught at Los Angeles College of Music and their core guitar classes were called String Theory. So actually if on my website, I sell my String Theory 1 book and I've written 5 String Theory books, String Theory 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for the college. And I keep wanting to like redo them and just like change a few things before selling them. But there's just only so much time in a day. So I do think about doing that. Like it'd be like a good like summer project or like on the road, or it wouldn't take that much time to do it. But I just love playing tennis and playing guitar. So it's hard to like commit myself to spending more time on a computer, but I will do it. It's just a matter of when. But I do have a String Theory 1 book available. Sorry, okay. Adam and Ethan. It's, yeah.
I mean, I see a bundling opportunity in the future when you get all 5 and then you bundle it with Adam and Ethan's and you like all 3 of you sign it.
Oh my God.
The deluxe box set.
I know. It has to be like beyond just like String Theory, you know, it's like string mastery.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I feel like I should ask you about your tennis setup since it's come up so many times. Are you like an old school paint job racket person? Like, do you do the new tech tennis racket? I'm sure you have thoughts on this.
I got it for my birthday a couple of years ago. I got a custom. I use the Wilson Clash. Okay. And like you can do it custom. And I wanted fun custom colors. So I have like, I've posted it on my Instagram story many a times. I have it in the other room. I got a big Wilson bag actually too.
Are you in tournaments and stuff? Are you doing that? Are you on that level?
I do play competitively. It's like almost embarrassing, but my mom kind of coerced me into joining her tennis team. So it's like me and a bunch of like women, 50, 60, 70. So I'll do that.
You're the ringer?
Yes. My mom's actually really upset because the last 2 matches I can't make. I live like 45 minutes from my parents and like, I'm like, mom, I can't make the last 2 matches. So I play competitively with my mom. I've done my own competitive matches, at USTA league up here. And then I did one with my boyfriend. We did like, we joined a mixed doubles one, but the problem is like my schedule is so weird that every time I join a league, I play like 1 match and I'm like, and also like tennis for me is really social. Like I play with friends, you know, like a bunch of guitar and bass folk, like playing with Yannick Gwizdala tomorrow. Yesterday, I played with my friend who runs Largo. I play with James Cornelison, who's another great guitar player. And like, there's like, I have a big community of musicians that I play tennis with. And it's fun to like talk shop and play tennis with friends versus like these like random competitive situations where I'm like, I kind of just want to like have a good match and like see what you're listening to or what show you're going to tonight, you know?
I mean, I see a tennis and guitar camp in your future.
Are you kidding? Yes. Like I keep trying to get people who on the Jason team to play too. I'm going to bring a ball machine out with me on tour this summer.
Oh, you have your own ball machine.
I'm going to buy one because last summer it worked out where I got to play at least once or twice a week, but I was like scouring the internet. Like where's a tennis club, calling these tennis clubs being like, hey, is there any 4-0 people that want to play Sunday morning? I'll give them a Jason Mraz ticket and exchange, you know, it was like so like silly.
They think it's a prank caller.
So yeah, I think I'm just going to, and there's a bunch of free courts in all these cities. So I'm just going to get a ball machine and go hit the balls and hopefully get some matches along the way. Cause I have upped my game lately and I want to keep it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think a guitar and tennis camp though, there's an audience for that. Obviously.
Maybe in August we could somehow get the tennis community out there as well.
I'll see how many public courts are near Old Town School. If you're coming to the Fretboard Summit, you can have a invitational tennis tournament or whatever you want.
I would love that. My birthday party last year was like a tennis barbecue.
I'll make some phone calls right after this. Josh Scott is leading a gravel bike ride, so it's not unheard of. In fact, I'm guessing there's more tennis and guitar crossover than gravel bike and guitar crossover.
Are you kidding me? This would be like a dream for me. This would be a true dream come true if I could like travel, hang out with a bunch of musicians, and then play competitive tennis.
Okay, well, competitive. We'll do it. I mean, it may not be competitive. You might be the...
You never know, though. There's really good... Like, James Valentine is, like, a crushing tennis player.
Interesting. Yeah.
And so, like, yes. Like, I'm telling you, I have a bunch of musician friends, like, that I play tennis with. But mostly, oddly, bassists and guitar players.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, almost exclusively, except my brother is a drummer, and then I have one other drumming friend that I play tennis with, but a lot of guitar and bass players. So I think we can make this happen, and it will draw a larger crowd maybe out.
Yeah. We've had a professional tennis player on this very podcast.
Who?
Murphy Jensen, who was one of the Jensen brothers. Who they were like... the bad boys of Wimbledon in the 80s, I think.
Cool.
Doubles. They were doubles players.
Cool.
And he was living in Seattle. He might still be. And so, he's been on the podcast.
See if he wants to come. It's going to be a big round robin invitational. The first annual.
Well, Molly Miller, we derailed this whole guitar nerd conversation with tennis talk, but... thank you so much. And the album is phenomenal. I'll include links in the show notes. And everybody go check it out.
Thank you, Jason. So good to be here and talk.
All right. That was my chat with Molly Miller, who turns out to be quite the tennis fanatic. Who knew? Maybe we need a Fretboard Summit Molly Miller Invitational Tennis Tournament. Stranger things have happened. Email me at podcast@fretboardjournal.com if you want in on that. We'll see if we can make it work. Till next time.